Chapter 13, Gyorgye, 1587 Silver Age. Father's summons, when it came, carried with it the usual connotations of a demand and the absolute certainty of obedience. As Gyorgye made her way through his golden halls, her heart galloped ahead of her, running wild with the thought of him having found out the truth of her alchemical pursuits. Always, always that fear lurked around every bend. What if someone broke into her home and spied the lab? What if someone managed to trail her through the shadows when she sold her batches, though she always concealed her face with her hermatian? What if? What if? What if?
Aetes and that nymph of his shall wed in a fortnight,
Father declared when Gyorgye approached his throne, though, of course, she already knew that. Her little brother had managed to secure his marriage a month after Pasiphae, though Aetes would never prove quite so grand an affair. Gyorgye inclined her head. Where was her father going with this? The Titan drummed his fingers upon his armrest.
You had something to do with it, yes?
Oh. Was that bad?
There was that. My little brother came to me at the party, all you have to help me, and I mean, who was I to refuse? So yeah, I may have whispered in a few ears.
Idias, rather.
And ear. It would have been weird if I had to say the same thing in both of her ears. Yeah.
Her father rolled his eyes.
The nymph descends from Kos.
It took a moment to even realize what he was on about.
You mean from Phoebe? She's a Phoebid. The genus is named after her.
Gyorgye trailed off when her father's visage made plain what he thought of her correcting him, even if it was with the obvious.
She's not a Phoebid.
Oh?
Koos founded the city of Colchis in his years apart from Phoebe, following the Ambrosial War, and during that time he had a lover. The girl comes from that line, which means she's the heir to the throne of Colchis, which yet remains unclaimed.
Gyorgye opened her mouth to point out the throne was unclaimed because Colchis was now run by a senate, the people having ousted their last king a decade ago. Given how Father had reacted to her last bit of insight, which turned out wrong, but whatever, she decided to keep it to herself.
Sure,
she said instead. Maybe if she went to grab some wine, by the time she got back, he'd have gotten to the part where this had something to do with her.
Through his new wife, your brother can thus claim the throne of Colchis.
Yeah, that will go over well. Excuse me, senators, but we're going to have to ask you to leave.
Gyorgye chortled, then realized based on the darkening of Father's face, she maybe should have kept that to herself too.
Ahem. I know you helped Athena secure a throne for her bastard demigod son in Kronion.
It's Athena now.
Gyorgye!
Father growled, and she winced, deciding not to mention the whole affair had not, in fact, ended so well for her.
You are to ensure your brother's ascension to Colchis' throne, bringing it into the fold of our empire.
All for the glory of Ilion, huh? Hyperion forbid he ask her to do something for Aetes' benefit.
Right. Sure, I will do that. Uh-huh. She hoped her smile didn't reveal the bilious turning of her stomach. A fortnight after the couple were wed, Gyorgye found herself aboard a trireme bound for the Axinos Sea and the nigh mythical Poli of Colchis. Father had granted Aetes the crew of the ship, enough men-at-arms to protect him, though certainly not enough to overthrow a city. Ixion led the warriors, and even now, he clung to Gyorgye's brother like a remora. The man approached his duty to protect the prince with such fervor, Gyorgye could only assume Ixion was the one wiping Aete's arse when the time came, and perhaps even sitting in the couple's bed at night, offering helpful guidance. The guard captain saw her grinning at him as she passed toward her brother's cabin, and he glowered, his expression growing darker still when she favored him with a wink. Discomfiting the self-serious offered its own small rewards. When she entered,
Idia lay reclining on the divan, Aetes kneeling beside her, stroking her hand, his expression wobbling between excitement and disbelief.
"We're to have a child,"
the man blurted.
"Huh. Well, that was fast,"
Karke said.
"I mean the pregnancy, not the conception. I mean to say, not that you were fast separately, just, fast together. Mutual quickness."
She cleared her throat, her own flush responding as Aetes looked away, blushing.
"So, congratulations."
"Thank you,"
Idia answered. The other nymph's smile so sweet, maybe she meant to offer gratitude to Karke for having arranged the wedding in the first place. Strange. Despite her long life, Karke couldn't recall too many instances of having done real good in the world. When was the last time someone had thanked her for aught she had done? On leaving the cabin, she offered Ixion another wink. This one, filled with a touch of lightness. Though accustomed to long voyages by ship, Karke could not say she much enjoyed them. And here in the Axinos Sea, the waters seemed darker than those of the Thalassa, more like to conceal benthic terrors in their fathomless depths. From a porthole in Aetes' cabin, she watched the slap of murky waves against the hull, certain an implied threat lurked behind each breaking of the water. Or perhaps it was the knowledge of their intent, with Kolchis drawing nigh. The deposed king, as it turned out, had been Idia's uncle. He and her parents had all perished, though loyalists had smuggled her out of the Poli during the coup. Though the girl wore a brave face, Karke could see the roil of emotion behind her eyes, the dread at returning, mingling with the desire she feared to acknowledge to reclaim her due. Had father pushed her toward this path? Karke felt certain he had. And now, Idia could well see the time to demure had long passed. Which meant Karke got to watch the rise and fall of her resolve, though she had no real words of comfort to offer the girl. Any of them, all of them, might well find themselves meeting the same fate as Idia's kin for this. And Karke could not shake the feeling that behind the ambition lay not the benefit of the couple, but that of her father, with Aete's fortunes an ancillary concern at best, and Idia's not even that.
"We cannot enter the city openly,"
Karke said, glancing back at the couple. The pair of them sat upon the divan, hands clasped, while Ixion leaned against the cabin door, affecting boredom Karke doubted he felt.
"We must conceal our identities until we have in place a plan to overthrow the Senate."
"We kill them,"
Aete said with a shrug.
"Break into their homes and drive them off, the way they did Idia's family."
"Sure, and when the populace finds out, we get to see what that looks like firsthand. Yeah, brother, I don't really think these senators ousted the royal family without the support of a lot of soldiers and a fair portion of the common folk. We have no allies here, and not half enough men to go in there and set the pair of you up as tyrants. You know, if you even wanted that sort of thing."
She fixed a hard stare on her little brother.
"If you want to be king for longer than it takes to eat supper, you and Idia need to come in as saviors, protecting Kolchis from a threat the mortal senators cannot face."
Ironic, given how much effort Karke had put into perfecting nectar to advance the cause of man, that now her plans hinged upon showing man inferior. But father had given her little choice, and challenging his orders would avail her little. Karke glanced back at the onyx depths encompassing them. Beneath them might lurk serpents vast enough to encircle the ship, whales that could capsize them on a whim, or even by accident. Other colossal spawn of echidna, squirming on the shrouded ocean floor. Beasts of which even she, an immortal daughter of Titans, might feel an innominate dread.
"We need something monstrous,"